I'm Lillian Vasquez, and this is Inland Edition. Loma Linda University Health has a vision statement that says, transforming lives through education, healthcare, and research. That inclusive statement guides the important work happening at Loma Linda University Health Hospitals. The man in charge of the hospitals is Chief Executive Officer Kerry Heinrich, and he is our guest today on Inland Edition. Thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be here today.
You have been described using these adjectives: knowledgeable, patient, compassionate, and committed. So I'm very anxious to speak to you about those and about this big project that's going on in our region. As an attorney, you started with Loma Linda representing them, and then you would later join the staff in 1984. You came to us from the Northwest region of the country. What brought you to Loma Linda?
The thing that brings a lot of people to Loma Linda, education. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, intended to stay there my entire life. One thing I was certain of early in my life is that I would never want to live in California. Be careful what you say, you'll never do. We moved to California for my wife to attend dental school at Loma Linda University, and she is an active practicing dentist.
You are an attorney. Was Loma Linda one of your clients at the time?
Yes, I began representing Loma Linda in the 1980s, served as outside counsel, ultimately we served in the role of general counsel for Loma Linda, and ultimately was asked to serve in my current role as chief executive officer.
All right, so now I want to talk a little bit about the older hospital, which you and your colleagues refer to as the Cloverleaf Building, first built in between 1963 and 1967. Tell me a little bit about that hospital and why maybe it was time for a new hospital.
The iconic Cloverleaf Towers, as we refer to them, were built in the 1960s. In the 1960s, the idea of only two patients to a room and a private bathroom for each room was a quantum leap forward in hospital care. People don't realize that today, but it was. But in 2021, the thought of sharing a room is just not optimal, to say the least. One of the drivers, of course, was the ability to ultimately provide private rooms for every single patient, both pediatric patients and adult patients. But that's not why we built the new hospital. The driver for the construction of the new adult tower really is 1994. Why? The Northridge earthquake and the effects seismically on hospitals across the LA basin. And then, of course, you had seismic events in San Francisco. The California legislature passed a series of laws that said if you didn't meet certain seismic standards, the hospital had to be replaced or close your doors. And it's that simple.
So was that the threat of 2019 when the idea came about that you might have to close the doors? Is that what the threat was?
Precisely. The timeline for completing that project was December 31, 2019. Mm. Well, building a new hospital is an enormously complex process. There is a tremendous amount of regulatory requirements that you have to comply with, a lot of standards seismically. So Loma Linda studied extensively whether we could reconfigure, refurbish, restructure our existing Cloverleaf Hospital in a way that would allow it to meet seismic standards by 2019. In the end, we concluded that it just wasn't both practical and cost effective to do that. And in the end, you'd still have semi-private rooms. So we then launched on a course and fast-tracked it as rapidly as we could to complete the construction of a new adult hospital, but we just simply couldn't complete it by December 31, 2019. So Loma Linda and a number of other hospitals across California went to the legislature and asked for an extension, and ultimately that very detailed process was approved by the legislature.
Okay, now I want to talk a little bit about the funding, because it is a huge financial project. How and where did the funding come from?
Well, I wish I could tell you that when Loma Linda made the decision to construct really two new hospitals, that I just sat down and wrote out a check from internal funds of the institution. But all in, this was a $1.5 billion project. So for Loma Linda, the process of putting together the financing of this project was extraordinarily complex. In order to make this all work, we had to rely upon four different key funding streams. First of all, we had to look at the bond community and going to the commercial bond market and raising in round numbers about $1 billion. That is a process that requires you putting together very detailed disclosure documents and literally starting in New York and then touring around the country with large investment houses. These are people that manage, for the most part, retirement funds, and they buy bonds, and those bonds have a particular yield attached to them. Investment houses buy those and invest dollars for the benefit of millions of people who have retirement dollars in their 401k or other investment vehicles that they use. So an important funding stream for this project was the bond market. The next critical funding stream for the Children's Hospital, that is the state of California. In the 1990s, the voters of California generously approved Proposition 61, and 4 years later, Proposition 3, that earmarked bond funds issued by the state of California, backed by the taxpayers, for children's hospitals. The third important funding stream for Loma Linda was philanthropy. We set out a goal of raising for the entire campus a series of projects. Certainly key among those was the new hospital construction project, but a goal of raising $360 million. A very audacious goal. I will be honest with you. When we first laid out the plans for this, I thought, how will we ever raise $360 million? The Inland Empire has incredibly generous people, but it's not the wealthiest region of the nation, nor California. But in the end, an amazing outpouring of support for the institution. Many people would have thought, well, it's alumni. And certainly the alumni opened their hearts in a very big way. But businesses, individuals, patients, loved ones across the Inland Empire opened up in a very big way. And in fact, not only did we raise $366 million, we actually exceeded $476 million raised for projects, key among them, of course, the new hospital. So that was the third funding stream. And the fourth, obviously, was operations and cash from the hospital organizational structure itself.
When you had to do the bond pitch, what was your story you were telling about Loma Linda that they would say, yes, we'll take a chance? Of course, we're a world-renowned hospital in our Inland Empire, but what was your story? What were you telling them?
Great question in terms of that whole process. You literally meet with hundreds of bond investor advisors around the country. And you're exactly right. You have to tell a story about why and why this is necessary, how, in fact, you will go through the process of constructing the hospital, its budget. And ultimately, the greatest question will be, what is the need and how will you pay for this? Well, the Inland Empire is a remarkable place in so, so many ways. It's huge. Most people don't think about this, but the county of San Bernardino is the largest county in the United States. The second largest county in the United States by geography is half the size of San Bernardino County, and that happens to be Riverside County. And Loma Linda serves as an important component part of that delivery system, not the only part, but an important part. It provides level one trauma services for the region. It provides a variety of very important tertiary quaternary services for patients in the region. And of course, it is the only children's hospital in the region. It's been here more than 115 years. It has an established record of performance. It pioneered infant heart transplantation. It pioneered a lot of important advancements in medicine. But most importantly, it is a resource for the people of this region And it's worthy of believing in the people of this region and the needs of the people of this region to have access to state-of-the-art healthcare. And in the end, that's a wonderful story to be able to tell to bondholders, because you're really telling the story of the needs of the people of the Inland Empire and the value of bringing a resource to the people of our region that so vitally need that resource.
You're listening to Inland Edition. I'm Lillian Vasquez, and we're talking to Kerry Heinrich. He's the CEO of Loma Linda University Medical Health Hospitals. I want to jump now to your lead gift of $100 million from Dennis and Carol Troche. Who are they?
Well, they are remarkable people, and I use that term very intentionally because Dennis and Carol Troche are a quintessential American success story. Dennis started years ago with a used dump truck and began hauling sand and gravel to various job sites around the Inland Empire. And he piece by piece, step by step, dump truck load by concrete load, built a company into, I believe, the largest concrete, sand, and gravel company in Southern California, probably the United States. All of us have driven on the freeways of Southern California, and a substantial portion of that concrete you're driving on was, in the end, mixed and delivered by Robertson's Ready Mix, the company that Dennis and Carol owned.
Got it.
But the remarkable story of Dennis and Carol is not just the success of building a company from the ground up. It is that they have a very fundamental belief about supporting the Inland Empire. And in Dennis's own words, he said, many people make their money in the Inland Empire and leave and take their money with them. Dennis and Carol made a very intentional commitment to give back to the people of the Inland Empire. And that was the basis for the lead gift of $100 million to Loma Linda for what is now known as the Dennis and Carol Troche Medical Campus.
Well, why don't we talk about San Manuel and the connection, if you'll share the story of the female doctor over 100 years ago and the connection that has remained with San Manuel Band of Mission Indians.
Certainly an incredibly important part of the history of the Inland Empire is the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians. If you turn the clock back 100 years, you would find that the history of our country and how it interrelated to and treated Native Americans is not something any of us should be proud of. And the treatment of many of the Native American tribes has been so difficult, and that is true for the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians. Their property, their reservation land that, remember, they were here first, but we ultimately pushed them into the foothills of the San Bernardino mountain range. And there they lived for generations, and they lived in extreme poverty. About 100 years ago, a relationship developed between the San Manuel tribe and Loma Linda. Lila George, a female physician, very rare if you turn the clock back 80, 90 plus years ago to have a woman licensed as a physician, she took a special interest in the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians, particularly the obstetrical needs of the tribe, the women of the tribe. Every week, she would mount up on horseback, ride to the reservation land, and she would provide prenatal care and ultimately at times obstetrical care on the reservation property. You turn the clock forward 100 years, we all know the remarkable success of the San Manuel Band and the amazing work that they have done. They have now become very successful with their casino activities. And lots of people want to be friends of the tribe today for lots of good reasons. But the relationship between the San Manuel Band and Mission Indians and Loma Linda goes back a century. And it started with a commitment of Loma Linda to care for members of the tribe that needed the care, not because there was an economic driver to do so, but because it was the right thing to do. And 100 years later, there is this close partnership between Loma Linda and the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians because that heritage goes back over a century.
Was it to the pediatrics or to the expansion building for the
children?
Well,
fittingly, when you understand the history, Dr. George, who rode to the reservation and provided prenatal and obstetrical care later on with a Model T Ford over to the reservation, hooking up a set of jumper cables to the battery of the car and using that as a light to provide care well into the night for patients. Fittingly, the $25 million gift made by the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians to Loma Linda was for now the largest unit in our new hospital, that being obstetrical care.
Okay.
So the new maternity pavilion in the new hospital is the San Manuel Band of Mission Indians Maternity Pavilion.
Now I want to talk about the construction. And if you would please describe this 16-story building that I understand has a lot of steel in it.
That would be the understatement. The statistics will change, of course, over time. But as we sit here today, it is the heaviest building per square foot ever constructed, with the exception potentially of military installations that, of course, I have no idea because it's classified. But for commercial buildings and hospital structures, the 16-story adult tower and children's tower sit on a series of seismic devices called pedestals and base isolators on top of those pedestals that allow the building to stay relatively stationary while you have a major seismic event occurring. You can actually drive a car underneath the building, and you can walk underneath the actual building itself. So you're standing on a 5 foot plus thick foundation of concrete. On that are built pedestals. It's the only building I am aware of that you could actually drive under.
Pretty awesome. Your move-in date was August 8th, or that was your targeted date. Did it happen, and how did it go if it did happen?
We spent more than 2 years planning for the move, a very complicated process, as you can well imagine. We retained a firm to assist us in planning for that move process. This firm has done the same function for Stanford and for Kaiser hospitals and other hospitals around California. And all of this, of course, is dependent upon very complex processes that all have to come together. First, you have to finish the building on your projected timeline. You have to get the state of California through its OSHPD department to sign off on the literally tens of thousands of systems that have to be tested and verified and then signed off. You have to have the state of California licensing and certification division go through all 1 million square feet of that new structures and sign off that it meets licensure standards. And then you have to choreograph every patient, every bed, every move, and the pathway of travel. So we planned all of that to occur on August the 8th. And in fact, literally thousands of people in our system came together that day to effectuate the safe transfer of patients from the original adult hospital, plus transfer of patients from our children's hospital into the new children's space. All of it occurred within a roughly 6 hour time window with amazing choreography. But if you think about it, we had to have a plan for every single patient based upon their diagnosis, the team of medical professionals that would go with that patient, the path of travel, and the team of professionals that would meet that patient when they arrived in the new space. All of that happened under that amazing set of plans without an adverse event, and it all went very, very smoothly. So in answer to your question, yes, we moved on August the 8th. Yes, we are post that process. And yes, I'm pleased to tell you that every patient was moved safely.
Well, kudos to you, your team, and all those there that are serving at Loma Linda. You talked earlier about the private rooms and the importance of the private rooms. If we have private rooms, before we had two in a room, so can we still serve as many when we went with the private room? Because now everyone will have a private room. But before, were you able to serve more because you had two in a room?
That's a great question and a complicated question. So we've been working on this concept for actually 15 plus years. The actual design of the hospital occurred 10 years ago. Hospital beds, construction-wise, cost today more than $4 million a bed into construction costs. So we had to think about this, and the experts said, medical care is changing. There will be fewer inpatient services in the future, more work done outpatient. Seems logical. So you probably, when you take that factor into account, and in semi-private rooms, when you're sharing a room with someone else, you have to be sensitive to gender issues of all types. You have to be sensitive to cohorting issues, meaning patients with infectious disease issues where you can't put another patient in that room, even though there would be space. So when you go to an all private room configuration, all of those cohorting issues theoretically disappear. So you should need fewer beds. Problem is, how would you predict the growth of the Inland Empire? And what we now know a decade later is that the size of the hospital, although wonderful, I wish it was substantially larger. Why? Because the very first day it was full. And that's a challenge now to know how to plan for the future, because our beds are full. The need is present in the Inland Empire, and COVID complicates that reality and to some extent skews that reality of what's the true need for beds in the Inland Empire or right. California or the country. But what we know nationwide is we're probably underbedded in most areas of the country, and certainly California, in terms of the true need for inpatient services. So that's an issue I'm studying right now with regard to the future.
So I was going to ask, you did all this, the team did all this, and you did it during a pandemic. How, from a CEO standpoint, was that?
I hope you have about 10 hours of time to discuss that question.
I need your Reader's Digest version.
Yeah, well, if I were to pick my timeline to construct and open a new hospital, it would not be during a pandemic. COVID, for thousands of reasons which you would understand, incredibly complicates the delivery of healthcare and the management of healthcare. So people don't think about this, but just as COVID affects the delivery of care to patients, it also affects contractors and subcontractors who build buildings. And so in the key portions of the surges that we have been through, and there have been three key surges, those surges of COVID have impacted the builders and how you actually do construction and how you manage your construction workforce. So that impacted our construction project. But I'm happy to tell you, we were able to bring our construction project in on time, on budget. Having said that, the delivery of care to patients is complex. There are times within our system that COVID has put us in a position of running 200% occupancy within certain of our hospitals. Well, think about that. If you're designed for 100 beds, that's complicated. And hospitals rarely run at 100% occupancy. They run most of the time around 80% because you have bed turnaround issues and cleaning of rooms. Just like a hotel, you right. can't run a hotel at 100% occupancy most of the time because you have turnover issues. But during the COVID surge, we have at times operated at 200% occupancy. That means we've put patients everywhere. It has strained our nursing staff, our respiratory therapy staff, our ICU staff enormously. And it's not unique to Loma Linda. Right. Every hospital has suffered under these conditions. And I'll just sum it up this way. COVID has strained nurses and respiratory therapists and physicians in ways they never thought imaginable. After the surge that hit us very hard in December and January of this year, there are a substantial number of nurses across the Inland Empire, California, and the nation who said, you know what? I'm done. I just can't do this anymore. When we ask them to work day after day after day, because the demand, the need is there, desperate need to take care of patients, a certain group of nurses legitimately, I'm not being critical, said, I'm tired, I'm done. That has reduced the available workforce in nursing. So I will tell you, I am incredibly in awe of our physicians, our nurses, our respiratory therapists, the people who clean the rooms, the people who make food, all of these people, and it's been used a lot, so it sounds a little tired, but they really are heroes.
Yeah.
They have stepped up during a crisis.
I know this is a question on people's minds, and I'm certain you get asked this many times. What will happen with the Cloverleaf building now? How will it be used, or what will it be used for?
I'm smiling because I spent the first 3 hours of this morning with my leadership team working on exactly that question. It's a complicated question. Why? Because what do you do with a hospital that still has years of life left in it, but it does not meet seismic standards for inpatient care? It does for outpatient services, for a variety of services. What is the wisest use of that space? Well, the answer is we will use it for ambulatory services, outpatient clinics, infusion services, a variety of things, assuming that the final iteration of rules from the state of California allows us to do that.
Right. And lastly, I want to end on a positive note and put you on the spot a little bit here. But what is your favorite part of the 16-story building or the expansion building? Because you've seen it all from the ground up. What room, what place is your favorite place?
Wow, there's a million square feet there. And that's a hard question to answer because before we opened the new hospitals on August the 8th, as you might guess, I didn't sleep well that night. And early in the wee hours, just after midnight on the 8th of August, I literally walked through every single unit and looked at the empty space and thought about the fact that each of these spaces for generations to come will serve the needs of people who are so sick and so in need of healing. And so every single space I walk through, whether it's the cardiac unit, the transplant unit, the obstetrical care unit, all of them have a special place in my heart because all of them will render care to people at the most vulnerable times of their lives. A hospital is unique because, to borrow Disney's term, who I know borrowed it from others, it's the circle of life. Babies are born in that building, and people will breathe their last breath in that building. It's in so many ways to us sacred space and our responsibility to care for everyone with the highest standard of care, to bring medical science to bear to heal, but also recognize that there are some that will not heal. And for those, they deserve our best, our finest, our most compassionate care during the last hours of their life.
Well, very good. Thank you for that eloquent answer. Gary, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to know you, talking with you, and learning more about a hospital here in our Inland Empire community. And I hope to take a tour with you as my tour guide sometime.
I'd love to give you a tour.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure to talk with you.
Carrie Heinrich is the CEO of Loma Linda University Medical Health Hospitals. You'll find more about Loma Linda University Health online at lluh.org. That's lluh.org. We'll include that web address and a link when we post this show on our program page. Join us next week for another episode of Inland Edition, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. and 6:30, right here on 91.9 KVCR. To hear this episode and past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/Inland Edition. You can also listen to Inland Edition on iTunes, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, or search for Inland Edition on your favorite streaming service. Inland Edition is a production of KVCR News. Support for this production, including writing and editing, comes from Sharina Wad, Rick Dulock, and David Fleming. And we get technical website and social media support from Tim Steidel and Sean Houlihan. I'm your host, Lillian Vasquez. Thanks for listening, and bye for now.